I should probably just join Lee's Patreon just out of expediency. If we're going to start working together, that'll be easy to do. I haven't read his fix yet. But I'm going to, obviously, but okay, here we go. Okay.
Chapter 18. Living Anchor. Living Anchor. Living Anchor. Pages of Tom Riddle's neat, elegant script stretched across the floor of the chamber, weighted down by conjured glass balls. 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 No. Harry stared down at them from the tip of the bridge.
"There's a lot of detail," Salazar said. "If he didn't perform the magic himself, he must have witnessed it, or received a very detailed account from someone who had."
The theory behind creating a Horcrux is in... The theory behind creating a Horcrux is in particularly great detail. Harry skimmed the section beneath the purple glass weights. It's much more than what's in the book.
Tell me.
They're created using the side effects of the killing curse, Harry grimaced, using the fragment fraction... Using the curse fractures the soul, allowing a wizard or witch of sufficiently strong minds to tear a fragment away and to place it within another object. Riddle isn't sure if the soul is physically torn and moved.
What did you say to me?
Yes.
God damn it! Oh, okay. See, when you said it's on the website, I didn't know you meant your website. I thought you meant on the website fanfictiones.net. Okay. Okay, so now it's the right chapter. Okay, like, it's the fact that they're created by inflicting the very thing that created. That's my new voice for Harry. The very thing that way wishes to avoid. Okay.
Like you suspected, they're created by inflicting the very thing the creator wishes to avoid upon another. Like you suspected, they're created by inflicting the very thing the creator wishes to avoid upon another. Harry grimaced. A wizard or witch of sufficiently strong mind can tear a fragment away and place it within another object. Riddle has corrected the book and written that as the soul is a symbolic representation that craves an emotive focus for a very complex piece of magic, that would otherwise... Riddle has corrected the book and written that as the soul is a symbolic representation that creates an emotive focus for a very complex piece of magic that would otherwise... That creates an emotive focus for a very complex piece of magic that would otherwise be impossible to cast. Nothing is actually torn. Nothing is actually torn. What type of object? Salazar asked. It doesn't say, but I assume it's not just any, since the notes often mention things that don't work. Harry shuddered. The more I read, the more I could get the feeling this was cobbled together from trial and error. The more I read, the more I get the feeling this was cobbled together from trial and error.
So what could be a Horcrux?
Riddle thinks they have to be of great importance or value to the Creator. Otherwise, the Creator doesn't feel enough of a connection to them, so... Otherwise, the Creator doesn't feel enough of a connection to them to successfully imbue them with a reflection of themselves. Once they're created, they're supposed to be almost impossible to destroy. Basilisk, Venom, and Fiendfire are the only two things mentioned. But Tom speculates magic of a similar nature but opposite intention to their creation might also work.
And how does Tom think they worked?
As an anchor of sorts. As an anchor of sorts, Tom perceived the soul as more of a magic-powered sense of self. Someone with strong will and powerful magic can survive so long as that sense of self endures. He believes the magic of a Horcrux imbues an object with a reflection of the creator. Their intent as a whole. The bond is then strong enough to tie themselves to life, even if the person's body is destroyed. He thinks that to create it, you must fuel your intent by demonstrating your absolute desire to remain alive. A life for a life.
Whoa, that gave me Alexander Quick flashbacks.
Harry swallowed and tore his eyes away from the page. And he's very sure it would require the killing curse, because that spell requires undiluted intent to kill. Salazar stared at him.
You may not thank me for saying this, Harry, but you've the very same knack my wife, daughter, and Tom did. I don't think there are many wizards who grasp this so quickly.
I suppose it's a compliment. Just because Tom Riddle was good at something and did bad things with it, doesn't mean I should be ashamed of being good at that thing.
Good for you, Harry, because get ready for the rest of the pick. You're going to be very good at everything that Tom Riddle fucking did.
There is some good news, Harry said. The soul isn't eternal. Tom believes both willpower and the sense of self decays as one ages, achieves, and lives, and the anchoring bond will fade. However, it can only fade when the Creator's intent fades.
So should Tom achieve his ambitions, it may prove his undoing, Salazar mused. Hey, it's just like hollowing in Dark Souls. It's exactly the same thing as hollowing in Dark Souls, actually. Ah.
I wonder if you can recover from casting this piece of magic, though. The intent required to cast it. Going so far as to inflict something you loathe upon another to escape it. That sort of act sacrifices more of a person than you might think.
Shadows rose in Salazar's eyes.
Perhaps that's what happened to Tom, twisted by the intent of his own soul magic. until nothing was left of his dreams and desires but an absolute will to endure. Until nothing was left of his dreams and desires but an absolute will to endure.
By the way, Dave, does it still sound good? But the accent, does it still sound decently authentic? I haven't checked in with you in a while on it, but you gave me a whole lot of confidence, and I hope I haven't misused that. No, don't feed my ego. Tell me if it sucks. Duke David of Athenai is typing. that's the whole thing with Dark Souls. There's a curse. Very good, thank you. Excellent, I like it. I like it very much. The hollowing in Dark Souls. It's the curse of the undead, especially in one. It's this whole deal where, eventually when you hollow, like, you lose your mind basically. Like you stay undead and you keep like rising up again after you die, but if you lose purpose, you lose your sense of self, and you basically go insane, and you're just this, like, feral creature, which, what up? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, there's things in the game where it's like, there's a guy that you keep helping over the course of the game. He'll be like in trouble. He's this like proud knight, and he'll be in some kind of a pickle, and you'll like help him out of it. And if you like, there's a point at the end where there's some dangerous monsters, and they're not actually all that dangerous, but like in the context of the story, and he's like, you see those monsters down there? I'm going to I will fight them for you. And if you go down there and help him, there's a few different ways that it can go, but one of the ways is basically he's like, oh, so you didn't need my help after all, da da da. And he sort of goes away, and then later he's hollowed. Because, like, he keeps trying to be of use, and he just doesn't manage to be for the entire game. And, you know, so it's Dark Souls is good. Dark Souls is fucking the lore in Dark Souls is great in the game. Dark Souls 1 is my favorite video game of all time. Anyway,
back to being Spanish.
Let's see.
An escape from the nothingness. An escape from the nothingness of death. Harry tapped his foot on the rough scrawl, marring the last few pages. Tom Riddle's broken quill tip stuck from the page beneath, surrounded by a circle of dark ink. Lord Voldemort. Perhaps it is.
What about the book? Salazar asked. What does it say?
Tom's corrected most of it. Harry Him. Harry held out his hand and summoned the book into his palm. There's a small section he didn't bother with. He skimmed the page. It's a warning. The author hypothesizes that creating several Horcruxes, or creating one and using the killing curse frequently afterward, may create such a strong mental association that, in the right circumstances, Horcruxes may be created accidentally because the intent of the creator's magic is affected by the resolution to endure. He talks about it as if it was healing. After a Horcrux is made, the creator may move on, and the Horcrux will eventually fade, as these other things. The creator may move on, and the Horcrux will eventually fade as those other things are achieved. Nope. The creator may move on, and the Horcrux will eventually fade as these other things are achieved, losing his immortality once his dreams are realized. In the absence of other true goals, an obsession with immortality itself may fester, and then, should the circumstances of the piece of magic occur by extreme coincidence, an accidental Horcrux may be created. A bond may well form between the accidental anchor and owner, possibly resulting in the development of an obsessive interest, or in the case of living creatures, a display of similar characteristics. The very same knack. Sharp, ice-cold fingers tightened themselves around his stomach, piercing through to his spine. Harry took several deep breaths and pictured the circle of dark ink on the... Harry took several deep breaths and pictured the circle of dark ink on the page, but Tom Riddle's quill tip stuck from it, and the ink seeped out like it had run... And the ink seeped out like it had run from the diary after Harry'd stabbed it.
I'm on Athena's side on that one, actually. by having the ink seeped out like it'd run from the diary after Harry'd stabbed it in prose. Sorry. The second one's fine. Itted is well, I mean, honestly, the only reason I mind itted is because it was hard for me to say. I would say, and the ink seeped out like it had run from the diary after Harry had stabbed it. That's what I would say in prose. I think it would sound cleaner. What? Well, you can put had next to each other. You know, like, that's just English. Okay. Okay.
Harry took several deep breaths and pictured the circle of dark ink on the page. But Tom Riddle's quill stuck from it, and the ink seeped out like it had run from the diary after Harry'd stabbed it.
I don't mind Harry'd at all. I think that helps the flow.
Salazar stared at him.
What's wrong, Harry?
In my second year, when the Shade of Riddle opened the chamber, and I learnt I could speak parcel tongue, I asked Dumbledore why Tom Riddle and I were so similar. And he knew. He's always known. The fist of ice clenched in his shattered and seat.
Oh, what? What? Yes, sir.
The fist of ice clenched in his stomach, shattered, and seeped into his blood. A tang of iron pulled on Harry's tongue. He's always fucking known. He told me he had absorbed a small part of Voldemort's power when I was given this scar. Harry hissed. Parcel tongue slipped from his lips.
Should I be slipped or slipping? Harry hissed, parcel tongue slipped from his lips. Should that be Harry hissed, parcel tongue slipping from his lips? Okay.
Harry hissed, parcel tongue slipping from his lips. It made us similar, he said, and gave me my ability to speak to snakes.
He lied to you.
Salazar's speech wavered between parcel tongue and English.
That'll be fun to do the effect on. I know exactly how I'm going to do that.
My parcel magic cannot be passed on in such a way. It's imperative you have my blood for the magic to work. Magical power can't be absorbed in such a manner either, or there would have been wizards killing each other left and right to do so. He knows about the Horcruxes. He knows that you are one. He has always known.
I'm a Horcrux. I'm what is keeping Voldemort alive. Why me? Harry's eyes shook. The glass paperweight shattered one by one, and dissolved into white mist.
So bloody unfair. So unfair.
I have to die. I have to die. He tossed the secrets of the darkest arts to the ground. The diary's gone. When I'm dead, so's Tom Riddle.
Salazar scowled. I will not allow it, he hissed. I will not allow it, he hissed. You are the heir of Salazar Slytherin, not a sacrifice to be used by lesser wizards. We will find another way, or we will make one.
Now I'm going to retake Harry's last line.
I have to die. The diary's gone. When I'm dead, so's Tom Riddle.
Harry slumped down onto the cold stone.
How many will have to die before we find one? Better to just get it over with.
As many as necessary, Salazar spat. We don't know how many of these Horcruxes Riddle has made besides yourself. Your death may simply ensure his secret remains undiscovered.
I can't tell Dumbledore I know about them.
No, you cannot. We can't predict his reaction.
We can't predict his reaction. He may be searching for other Horcruxes, or keeping you alive as long as he can. By the moment you become a liability, he might kill you. Worse things have been done for the greater good.
I'm not a match for Albus Dumbledore. Harry stared at the slim crack joining the stones between his feet. Voldemort might be, but I don't think he's going to be much help. I'll have to walk a path apart from either of them. Harry sighed. Alone. I'll have to walk a path apart from either of them. Harry sighed. Alone.
I will think on this, Salazar said. A solution may present itself.
Tempus, Harry murmured, tapping his wand on his wrist.
A few minutes to 11, Harry groaned. Katie.
I'm gonna pause and save. I'm very happy with how that scene came together.
Look, it's like, who do you serve, Varys? It's like,
I serve the realm, Lord Eddard.
You know, it's that shit. And he does a phenomenal and inconsistently applied Welsh accent for the Lannisters. Tyrion always has the same voice. Jaime spends the first two books not sounding Welsh, but then he starts sounding Welsh in book three, and Cersei doesn't start sounding Welsh until book four. Cersei's un-Welsh voice sounds way better, frankly, and Tywin spends most of it sounding like, Winston Churchill, actually, for a lot of it. Like, you are my brother! You know, like that. Which is a bit of a shame, because that is the delivery for that line in the books, which is fine, because that scene is different in the books. But, like, in the show, that's one of the best Tywin moments of the entire series, where it's like, I am the Queen Regent, you are my daughter! Like, that, it's such a good fucking delivery. What am I doing? Oh, yes. I'm reading a fan fiction. Okay.
The Marauder's map showed Katie waiting for him at the entrance hall. Pettigrew's name hovered at the edge of the Quidditch pitch for a moment, then vanished off the corner of the map. Smile, Harry, he strode from the chamber. It's not Katie's fault. Make sure she enjoys her date. Might be how she remembers you.
Look, I ain't incestuous as nothing. I'm fucking... I am a Hope cousin, thank you very much. I'm a cousin. I'm a Hope cousin.
Katie hovered near the entrance, wrapped up in a thick duffel coat and an orange and yellow scarf. Her hair was tied up on her head, her lips red and her eyelashes dark. Harry transfigured his creased robes into something more fitting and patted his... Harry transfigured his creased robes into something more fitting and patted his... Nah. Harry transfigured his creased... Nah. Harry transfigured his creased robes into something more fitting and patted at his hair. It sprung back up straight away.
Harry, Kitty beamed. I was beginning to worry you weren't coming.
Well, I'm nervous, but not that nervous. I was, not now, though. No point in being nervous now. No point in being anything. She grinned and slipped her arm through his. Her warmth radiated from his shoulder to where their thighs brushed.
So where are we going? Harry asked.
Madame Puttyfoot's?
The place with all the pink? Harry tried to picture sporty, casual Katie there among all the fluffy cushions. Harry tried to picture sporty, casual Katie there among all the fluffy cushions and hearts.
Really? Please say no, it's such an awkward, uncomfortable shop.
Yes, do you mind?
Not if that's what you want, Harry said. It doesn't really seem like your sort of place, though.
Full marks, Harry.
Kitty laughed. Definitely
not my cup of tea.
But I did enjoy the brief look of horror you wore. So you don't want to go? Harry sighed. That's a relief. You know, actually... That's a relief. You know, it actually ranks higher than Snape's office on the list of places Gryffindor boys never want to find themselves.
All girls like a little romance, but that's not my type. Let's go to the Shrieking Shack. We can meet up with Angelina, Alicia, and the twins afterward.
He nodded and led the way to the Shrieking Shack. Katie bounced alongside him, a broad grin on her lips. Stray locks of hair slipped from its bun.
What?
Yeah.
There's no way you mean it's.
What? Stray locks of hair slipped from its bun. Her, probably. Yeah.
Stray locks of hair slipped from her bun and dangled down over her eyes. I love this place. Nobody ever dares come in, but it's so cool.
Katie glanced around, then pointed to the dent Professor Lupin had left in the wall.
That's new.
Do you know the real story? Harry asked.
No, everyone just knows it's haunted. I didn't know there was a... I didn't know there was a real story.
I can tell you if you'd like.
I can tell you if you'd like.
Yeah, that's better.
Katie brushed the splinters off the three-legged chair and gestured for Harry to sit on one half. He obliged. Katie took the other side, wrapping an arm around his waist to keep her... Katie took the other side, wrapping an arm around his waist to keep her balance.
Tell me.
A while back, there was a student at Hogwarts who was a werewolf. Every full moon, he'd come here to transform, sneaking out of the castle using a secret passage. The werewolf was lucky enough to have three friends who didn't care what he was, and they decided, in order to help him, that they become an imaga. And they decided, in order to help him, that they become an Imagi. That they become an Imagi.
There we go. Well, to be entirely fair, that wasn't them, that was me.
How would that help?
Katie eyed the claw marks on the walls. Werewolves aren't dangerous to animals. Their bite only affects humans. However, the transformation is supposed to be very painful, and so to keep him company, they turned into animals and came here with him.
Did nobody ever realize?
I don't know, Harry said. That's more or less the whole of the story as I know it.
How did you learn about this place? Do you remember Professor Lupin?
Harry asked.
Yes, he was a really good teacher, but he resigned because... Oh, he was the student.
He told me about it last year.
Wait a fucking second! I just realized something. If the Shrieking Shack is in Hogsmeade, at the end of book three, why didn't they just exit the shack that, like, why didn't they just go out the front door? There's Aurors and Dementors everywhere all over the fucking... Oh, it's boarded up, I see. Ah, yes, you can't possibly fucking... And you can bet your fucking... Oh my god! No, couldn't be, because that's stupid. I will say, On a more positive note, I don't know how familiar people, like, okay, I've listened to the Jim Dale Harry Potter audiobooks a million fucking times, right? How many people have seen the covers those have on Audible? Because those covers are fucking great. They're like the top fucking tier covers. Let me find the one for Azkaban because it's amazing. Look at that. How good is that? Almost all of them are puns like that. Like visual puns, like the one for Half-Blood Prince is great too. I don't think there's a pun in the last one, but all the rest of them are. Oh yeah, God, the one for Half-Blood Prince is it, like the Half-Blood Prince cover makes me like that book better. Oh, the Order of the Phoenix one. Oh my God. The fucking order of the Phoenix one is like, this could work as a logo for the entire series. Okay, all right. I'm gonna keep reading. This has been one of the long, like this has been one of the most needlessly long recording sessions I've ever done. I've been so unfocused during this. Matt, I wouldn't blame you for a second if you just like fucked off and went to bed. That would be entirely okay. But anyway.
He told me about it last year. Who were the other three then? Sirius Black, Peter Pettigrew, and James Potter. No. Sirius Black, Peter Pettigrew, and James Potter. And James Potter. His voice cracked at the last... His voice cracked at the last name, and he glanced away with a grimace.
Your father?
Kitty squeezed his shoulder and gave him a smile.
Thanks for telling me this story, Harry. It must mean a lot to you.
In a way.
I've come here almost every time I visit Hogsmeade, but I never knew what it was actually for.
What did you think it was? What did you think it was?
I always thought it was a hoax, Kitty said. I never saw any ghosts when I came here. I never saw any ghosts when I came here.
Well, now you know. Well, now you know.
Kitty tucked herself under his arm. It's good you're taller now. You can keep me warm. You can keep me warm. Tis a little cold.
Harry, Harry waved a hand at the walls. The shack doesn't really have much insulation. The shack doesn't really have much insulation either. Katie beamed and shifted a little closer to Harry. A loud snap echoed through the room, and they were pitched to the floor. Harry brushed his robes off and offered Katie his hand. Oops, I think that was Professor Lupin's favorite chair. Katie giggled and let him pull her to her feet. We've broken one of Hogwarts's most iconic buildings. We've broken part of one of Hogwarts's most iconic buildings. Professor Lupin won't mind. He started the demise of the chair himself. Harry surveyed the remnants as Katie brushed the dust off her robes. And fingered his wand. I could repair it, but then it'd be like this moment never happened. Ready? He asked. Ready? He asked. She nodded, then dragged her hair out of its bun and shook it free. That's better, she grinned. Sorry, Harry. I'm happy to wear makeup for you, but I'm not tying my hair up until at least the third date. Why would she wait? Oh. Harry felt heat creep into his cheeks. Wow.
Was that all you were talking about, Matt? Because, like, yeah. Okay. No, yeah, I'll quote the Sonic Pogs. That's just bants in it.
He scrabbled for some words. Careful, I might try and hold you to that. Katie's grin came with a wicked gleam in her eye. I will if you don't. Harry forced himself to take a deep breath. I think I should concede defeat now.
Well, I'm not sure you can go any more red in the face anyway, Katie laughed. Let's go to the Three Broomsticks. We're out of chairs here.
They made their way back towards Hogsmeade's best pub. Harry let the quiet song of the birds, the gentle breeze, and the smell of the woods wash over him. His steps sprung over the frosty ground. His steps sprung over the frosty ground. Katie slipped her hand into Harry's. Her soft, warm fingers curled tight through his and over the back of her hand. Angelina, Alicia, and the Weasley twins sat round a table pressed against the side wall of the inn. Shouts, cheers, and the buzz of conversation rolled overhead. Shouts, cheers, and the buzz of conversation rolled over Harry like a wave.
Loud, he grimaced.
Come on. Kitty pulled him toward the table.
I will say this, just to make sure that it is not, one, that I played the previous scene correctly, and two, that this is your intention in the writing. It's a little weird that Harry's going on a date and hanging out with Angelina and Alicia on that date. Literally right after they just had a really uncomfortable apology when no one really sounded sorry. Like, I think the simplest thing to do would be to, I mean, because it's not even very, very, very much text. If you wanted, I think, and you don't have to do this right now, but I think that, well, Athena, it would have been in what you've heard from here so far. I guess what you would have missed is that Angelina's basically been turning the rest of the Gryffindors against Harry. But like, they like when she apologized as written in the previous chapter, it was very much like, I still don't fucking believe you, but let's bury the hatchet because, you know, whatever. Katie convinced me, and Harry's like, da-da-da, that's fine, there's no need to perpetuate this, we're not friends if we ever were. And that does not jive with them chilling out in the Three Broomsticks together in this scene. Okay, if you do it, like, you don't have to do it during this session, but if you do, let me know and I'll redo it, because then it'll mesh better when I re-record it. Yeah. Oh, you mean you're gonna tweak this scene? Okay, I'll wait on you then. Okay. Yeah. I'll chill for a moment. No, Athena's reading. ACV. She started like last night or something. Yeah, thinking more about it, it probably is better to change this scene than that one, because it's like it wouldn't be like Angelina to back down from her guns that fast, and it wouldn't be that good for Harry to bury his hatchet quite so gracefully as would be required for this scene as written to make sense. So yeah. Because it's a big, yeah, last night, in a DM with me and Athena and Matt, I started basically just gushing about ACV, and like the things I was saying. And some of the things Matt was like responding with were like, she's like, I gotta kind of read this. I will say I won the fucking lottery, like getting this job, because it's gonna be really cool to have a full audiobook version of this. It really, really deserves it. What's up? Okay. No, you're good. No, yeah, I'm not. I'm good to... I'm almost done with everything anyway. A little bit more time, isn't it? I'm hopeful that I can finish the editing of the previous recording session's batch today. I'm not sure whether I'll be able to, but I hope I can. Well, no, not for you, no, but yeah. I'm really excited to get going on Lee's stuff too. I'm real because I've by a reputation, I'm given understanding that he's quite good, and I have been sort of looking for good fics to read anyway, and and the thing is, it's like I haven't really latched on to another fic to start reading yet, because I didn't want to get started on Ace's stuff yet, because I thought the Lee thing might kick off, or at least get close enough to kicking off that I could start reading his stuff, and I've just been sort of picking away at Harry's a Dragon, and that's okay, which I fully recommend to you guys, if you like fluff. It's a lot of fluff, but it's fucking adorable. But I'm excited that there's basically, here's a bunch of fics that are really, that I can count on them being of good quality. And it's, like, genuinely a productive use of my time to read them, you know? Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. I saw the text change. There we go. Excellent. That'll work. Where the fuck was I? There we go. Yeah.
Angelina's gaze tracked Harry all the way to the table, then flicked to Katie. She pursed her lips and stole a pair of chairs from the table. She pursed her lips and stole a pair of chairs from the table behind and glared when the bunch of third years tried to protest. All we need now is the keeper.
It's a good thing Woods left to... It's a good thing Woods left to join the big leagues. It's a good thing Woods left to join... It's a good thing Woods left to join the big leagues.
A twin Harry presumed friend, since he was closest to Angelina, offered a broad grin. He wouldn't be happy with this.
Indeed, brother mine, George said. He'd be outraged.
Fred snickered. He'd be the only member of the team not dating another...
He'd be the only member of the team not dating another teammate.
Katie disappeared into the... Katie disappeared into the crowd by the bar. Harry laughed.
We get a very long lecture about squad relations. And he would have forced us all to be married so we couldn't separate and harm the atmosphere of the team.
Katie's nearly 2 years older than me. His laughter faded. A few successful dates in a few years, and you might start thinking about stuff like that. That's not such a long way away.
I got fire whiskey.
Katie wriggled through the... Katie... Katie wriggled through the crowd and back to the table, three small glasses clutched in either hand.
"How'd you manage that? How'd you manage that?"
The twins stared at her like she'd just turned water to wine.
"Well, the drinking age is 17, Katie shrugged. "I might only be a fifth year and 16, but I'm sitting with 3 6-years. But I'm sitting with 3 6-years who are nearly over age. I guess they just assumed I was too.
"What about Harry?" Fred asked. "He's in it all fourth year.
He's in it all fourth year.
He's not ill."
He's not ill. He's not ill. He's not ill.
Oh my God, that's better.
That I've never actually asked anybody directly. That is what that means, right?
Ickle.
Ickle means ill, right?
I know what it means. I'm saying if it's written that way, are you supposed to say you're supposed to say it ill, right? Not ickle. Like, sometimes I'll do it. Well, I mean, I'm guessing from context, and I'm also not British. I don't know. Like, it's... Well, I mean, it's easily changed, and we find that it's not that way. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we can easily just edit a thing to make it look like you said that, but yeah. Well, that's the thing, Athena. Like, how would that even be expressed in text, ill? You know, like... It's like I glottal stop, you know, like schwa L. Oh, yeah, I guess they probably would say it, yeah. Yeah, check that. I do want to get this right. And I mean, even if Athena finds evidence that it's supposed to be, you know, ill, and if Matt still wants ickle. Yeah, but you can't really count on anybody explaining this in an article or whatever to actually use IPA. This just reminds me that I'm out of fucking beer. I have a feeling that it is meant to be a written version of ill, but I also have a feeling that anyone who is saying it ironically probably would say it ickle, and that would probably be Fred and George. As a matter of fact, I'm confident enough I'm just going to keep going with it. Like, I have read it as ill before in this audio, but in this scene, I already have the ill take. So I'm gonna just do it again and just keep going. We'll find out what Athena found out later.
"What about Harry? What about Harry, Fred? What about Harry?" Fred asked. "He's a nickel fourth year. He's a nickel fourth year. He's not ickle." He's not ickle. He's not ickle.
Angelina and Alicia burst into giggles. Angelina and Alicia burst into giggles. Harry inspected the grain of the table, willing the heat to fade from his face. Katie flushed bright crimson.
They never asked. I guess they assumed that if he can defeat a Dark Lord as a baby, he can manage alcohol.
Are you sure you can manage him, Katie? Alicia waggled her eyebrows.
I guess I'll be keeping the rest of these, then.
Katie passed a single whiskey glass to Harry and each to the Weasley. Katie passed a single whiskey glass to Harry and each of the Weasleys, then swept the other three into a line in front of herself.
We'll behave,
Angelina met Harry's eyes for a moment, then raised her palms. Harry doesn't want to see drunk Katie on his first date. We don't want to ruin anything.
It would put even the most lovesick of suitors off, George said.
I remember when Alicia was given a whole case of elderflower wine because the shop lost her ordered bottle and the three of us drank it on New Year's Eve. I took the candle you stole from the Great Hall and you got so angry you tried to transfigure me into a goblin. Alicia dissolved into giggles, gasping for breath. Katie blushed.
I didn't. I only threatened.
No, no. Alicia gasped through laughter.
You tried very hard, but you were using a breadstick from the kitchens instead of your wand.
And you were certain that it was your wand, Alicia said. Alicia ate it in front of you, and you burst into tears because you thought you'd never be able to do magic again.
I did not, Katie muttered. I don't remember doing any of that.
Of course you don't, Alicia smirked. It was a 13-bottle case, and you drank 7 of them. You fell asleep in the middle of crying about your breadstick, and we had to carry you back to bed.
Never let her drink, Harry, Angelina said. She's very funny drunk, but an absolute disaster to deal with.
We've 100 more stories from that night alone. Katie blushed.
I didn't. I only threatened.
The reason I'm laughing is because I've seen that exact same mistake in My Immortal. Okay. Oh my god, okay, we go.
Well, keep them to yourselves. We'll keep them to yourselves.
Katie pushed her lips together and curled them inwards into a small pout.
I don't drink all these.
Angelina crossed her arms. Go ahead. Katie lined up the three glasses and gulped them down, placing them in a neat row in front of her. She beamed.
Done.
I'm very happy I managed to get that out right. I was trying to do... Yeah, okay. I like that.
Uh-oh. Fred and George chorused. We're in trouble now.
Farm whiskey is potent stuff, Fred said. It's meant to give you a buzz no matter how much you drink, but the more you do, the stronger and longer the feeling.
Harry glanced at the three empty glasses, then at his own. How strong?
Don't worry, Harry, Kitty cheered. If you can't beat him, join him.
I'm ramping it up, don't worry.
She pushed his glass toward him. She pushed his glass towards him. The Weasleys linked arms and down their own.
Not that strong, just a little bit of cheer. Not that strong, just a little bit of cheer, Fred said.
Unless you drink several, brother mine, George added. Then it's triple the effect.
Harry eyed the amber liquid.
It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt.
Katie pushed it towards him with her... Katie pushed it toward him with her fingertip.
You'll feel great. You'll feel great. You'll feel great. You'll feel great.
One's fine, Angelina said. Alicia nodded. Three's trouble, but one's nothing.
I actually cultivated, I say cultivated, that sounds pretentious. I figured out the voice that I decided to do for Katie specifically with drunk Katie in mind. That was one of the primary things. I have to be able to do this voice adorable drunk. That it won't work if I can't.
Harry raised the glass to his lips and tipped the fire whiskey down his throat. It seared down his throat like liquid flame, then pooled into a deep, warm glow in his stomach.
Actually, after the first bit, it's not bad. See?
Katie shuffled close to him, her hand resting on his thigh.
It's a good buzz.
And three? And three? And three? Katie gave his leg a squeeze.
I probably shouldn't have drunk three. Triple the buzz, but... Triple the buzz, but it messes with your head a bit too much. Just be nice to me and I won't bite.
She leant into his ear.
Much larger chance of me tying my hair up now. Much larger chance of me tying my hair up today now, Kitty whispered.
Harry laughed and let the warm tingle radiate through him.
Don't make promises you can't keep, Katie, he murmured back.
Angelina and Alicia dissolved into giggles again. Fred gave him a thumbs up and a wink.
Definitely can't call you Harrigans now, George said.
How long does this last?
Harry asked.
Not long, Fred said. For us, less than half an hour. For Katie, maybe a couple of hours.
We should head towards Honeydukes, Alicia said. Fred promised us chocolate, and Lee's probably waiting there by now.
Angelina giggled.
And we'll give Harry and Katie some time, so Katie can tie up her hair.
Katie flushed.
Go away. Go away, you quaffle-hogging whores. Go away, you quaffle-hogging whores.
Alicia and Angelina burst into laughter again, then rose and squeezed out past Harry. Angelina bent to Harry's ear.
Keep her cheerful, she murmured. Katie's an extremely emotional drunk, but lovely as long as she's happy.
Alicia smiled as she pulled her coat and scarf back on. Of course, being Katie and being drunk means just about anything could upset her. She once cried for 10 minutes because she dropped a sandwich when we went to the... She once cried for 10 minutes because she dropped a sandwich when we went to the kitchens after celebrating Lee's birthday. Katie shook her head and beamed. I'm always happy. I'm always happy. Thanks for the whiskey, Katie! Thanks for the whiskey, Katie! The twins chorused over their shoulder as they left.
Let's go wander.
Katie slipped an arm around his... Katie slipped an arm about his waist, then squirmed over his lap to grab her coat. Harry pushed himself up from his seat and helped her get her arms back into her blue duffel... Harry pushed himself up from his seat and helped her get back... Harry pushed himself up from his seat and helped her get her arms back into her blue duffel coat. Where shall we wander?
I don't mind.
She wrapped her arm back round his waist.
Happy to drift about as long as I'm with you. As long as you're with me.
A lump swelled up in Harry's throat, and he turned his head away to blink back liquid heat from his eyes.
Nobody's ever said anything like that to me before.
Katie glanced around, then giggled and pushed him down a side alley. She wrapped her hand round her hair and coiled it atop her head, staring up at him and biting her lip.
Why, oh,
Harry gulped, despite the warmth of the alcohol in his blood.
Is she serious?
Katie burst into laughter.
Just kidding. It's too cold out here, and I'm not that sort of girl. Takes more than 3 fire whiskies to get me on my knees, Harry.
He stroked his chin in mock thought.
We could always go back for a couple more.
Nice try. Nice try. Katie shook her hair back down over her scarf and dragged him out of the alley.
I'm only teasing, though. I'm only teasing, though.
Her eyes slipped down from his face.
Well, this time I'm only teasing.
She seized Harry's hand and bounced away up the street, She seized Harry's hand and bounced away up the street, tugging him after her. End of chapter 18.